It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer. If you're in Pittsburgh, you probably know someone with a PhD. Last year, Forbes magazine ranked Pittsburgh the second smartest city in the United States, pointing out a significant increase in the proportion of the city population that is college educated. We generally assume the more education, the better, but the most likely educated among us are not being hired at the rate they used to be. We generally assume that the more education is the better. But in fact, joining us today to perhaps dispel that idea and talk about their efforts in expanding the options for Pittsburghers with advanced degrees are Alexandra Oliver and Anupama Jan. They are local representatives for Versatile PhD, a business that fosters networking and professional development for people with graduate degrees who may want to explore non-academic work. Alex, Anu, welcome to Essential Pittsburgh.
Thank you.
Thanks.
And you can join the conversation at 412-246-2002. That's 412-246-2002. Email is ESSPGH at WESA.FM and on Twitter at ESSPGH, hashtag EPLive. Is there an employment problem for people with PhDs? And if so, how would you describe it? What's going on out there? Alex, let's start with you.
Yes, there absolutely is. There have been major changes that have happened in higher education over the past 30, 40 years, and that has really radically impacted the labor situation for most professors. Many people have called this a crisis. I don't think that's wrong. And it's taken place in a number of different levels. First of all, the wages are definitely not the same, and also the types of work that people are doing is really quite different. So some people have referred to this as adjunctification because most of the people now who are coming in into faculty-type jobs are not tenure-track full-time staff, but rather are adjuncts. And these people tend to be on really short-term contract positions. Sometimes they're hired for only one semester, and they're paid poverty wages, about, I think, average $2,700 per class.
This is a relatively new phenomenon, and it's because colleges are presumably they're trying to just save money. They're being cheap. What's going on?
Definitely, I think that's part of it. It's way cheaper to hire somebody on a short-term contract with few or no benefits, and also I think that it's been a shift in the priorities in the way that educational institutions are kind of conceiving of what education, higher education, is.
So, how's that changing?
Well, when you look at the ways that capital expenses and administrator salaries and coaches' salaries have way outpaced the salaries of professors, you definitely see a shift in priorities.
And, well, tuitions are going up. It's not like it's costing less to go to college now. So if students are spending more money, if tuitions just keep rising and rising, how much of a student's dollar really goes into teaching, and how do we value university teaching? Anu?
So in the last decade at least, faculty salaries have not increased as a percentage. In fact, they've flatlined, whereas administrative salaries have gone up in higher education about 400%. So much of the rise in tuition is not going to faculty. And I think what's different now, and it is the adoption of certain corporate strategies that may or may not be successful in a higher education, is that 75% of the instructors at universities and colleges are what is called contingent faculty, hired by class, by semester. And that used to be the opposite. It used to be 75% of teaching faculty in higher education actually had long-term contracts.
So is anybody there's the whole tenure thing. You want to be on the tenure track, which basically is job security. Does that – I mean, are people still being hired that way?
They are. In the field of literary studies, which is where I know best, the number of new PhDs being produced each year combined with the number of PhDs who still haven't gotten full-time secure employment means that there are hundreds of people applying for the jobs that do appear. So you've got a real numbers problem. There's no way in the current environment that everyone who gets a PhD just in the field of English there is not a job for each of them in the tenure track.
So you put in all this time in graduate school, you get your PhD, but there's no guarantee that there's a job out there, at least in academia, that is waiting for you. So what kinds of things does versatile PhD do for people? And as I mentioned at the outset, this is a business. It fosters networking and professional development for people with graduate degrees. So what do you do for them? How do you help them? And where do you channel them? If they're not finding a job in those ivy-covered walls, then where are they going to find one with a PhD?
So I should maybe just distinguish kind of what we're doing from Versatile PhD generally. So Versatile PhD is, as you mentioned, it's an organization that was founded originally by a woman called Paula Chambers, initially as a listserv to kind of discuss some of these issues and bring people together, and now has developed into a full-on website with a lot of functionality and a number of different resources. We're kind of like a chapter of that, or as we prefer to refer to it, as a meetup of Versatile PhD. And these are going on all over the country in various cities. So what we do primarily locally here is we do two things, I'd say, primarily. We connect people to people, and we connect people to resources. So connecting people to people is pretty straightforward. We have a number of social events, networking events, happy hours, and so on. And then connecting people to resources means a couple of different things. Directing them to the resources that exist on versatilephd.com, which is terrific, and also directing them towards resources in some cases locally. We also have a social media presence, so there's a number of different ways that people can find us. And we found that people have begun interacting kind of with that community kind of amongst themselves, so offering up additional resources, opportunities, and so forth.
I was talking with an acquaintance a few years back, and he had his master's. He was having trouble finding a job, and he said, perhaps out of frustration, so I wasn't sure completely how sincerely he meant it, but he said, education means nothing. Going to graduate school, it's not like it used to be, and it has lost a lot of its value. Is that what's going on? And if so, why? Why would universities presumably value education less?
I don't know that that's necessarily the right way to frame it, although I can definitely understand why somebody who's very frustrated with the job situation, job prospects would feel that way. I think that people value it for a number of different reasons, and some of those are intensely personal. Some of those do have to do with professional development, and there are real, genuine skills that you do build that I think are quite unique as a graduate student, whether that's at a master's kind of level, I'm doing a more professional degree, or at PhD level, doing a research degree. So I think that it really wide, quite diverse range of the value that people get. And so I don't think it's necessarily reducible just to that job that you get at the end. And so one of the things that we're trying to do is really emphasize that if you do decide to go on and do a PhD, for whatever reason that may be, whether it's for your personal interest or because you're driven by a research question that nobody else has answered or for something else, that there are still options for you at the end. And I think that the fact that people think or continue to think in this very narrow way that when you get out, there's only this one job waiting for you is really, in fact, the wrong way to think about it.
And is there a tendency for people to feel alone in this situation? You know, that are people feeling isolated anew?
I think that we hear over and over again, nobody talks about this. I'm afraid of alienating my professors or my colleagues. I'm afraid of seeming uncommitted, not passionate enough. And there is a conundrum where the people who are training graduate students are themselves professional scholars. And so that's what they have to impart, how to become the best most successful scholar that you can, which translates in the work world as a tenure track job. But since most of these students, just by sheer numbers, are not going to go on to replicate the professional lives of their professors, we're filling a gap. Versatile PhD does that with its online presence and all of its resources and its subscription services for higher education institutions. What Alex and I have been doing with our local chapter of Versatile PhD and our scholars at large workshops is we've been filling in the gap of making it okay to talk about this and convincing people not only are they not alone, but we can learn from other people's experiences, especially people who've successfully, often happily transitioned, who value their PhDs, but have gone on to places like McKinsey Consulting that is actively seeking out PhDs and understands the values that Alex mentioned in that kind of graduate work.
And Anu, you personally had the experience of being a professor before you left university life.
Yes.
So, so what are those options? I think you just mentioned one, but what are the things that are out there that are available to people who have already made inroads into an academic career? So they've kind of started down this path, and now they're realizing I've got to try and do. There has to be an alternative to this because this isn't working for me.
One of the most, earliest sort of national efforts was identified by a hashtag called ALTAC for Alternative Academic, tended to be people who wanted to stay within higher education, but perhaps would have an administrative set of skills or interests. And so there are people who may teach, not be on the tenure track, but be very involved in the life of the mind in a slightly different way. So that was one of the first things. And so there are many people with PhDs who are technically staff members at Pitt and CMU. We have a lot of people who've crafted jobs. They've invented jobs for themselves. We know some real go-getters in communications who do various kinds of consulting work and have made a viable career out of that. We have know people who are in not-for-profits. That seems to be a very popular place for especially humanities PhDs. I think in the sciences, private industry, of course, continues to be a very attractive alternative, although even in that sector, we're seeing fewer jobs. So
we're talking about Versatile PhD, an organization that fosters networking and professional development for people with graduate degrees who may want to explore non-academic work. And as we're hearing, there seems to be less academic work for people with PhDs. So this has created an employment problem, people wanting to put their degree to use and not always having the opportunity to do so. It's Essential Pittsburgh. I'm Paul Guggenheimer, and we are talking about the idea that we assume that the more education, the better, but that the most highly educated among us are not being hired at the rate they used to be, particularly by colleges and universities. So there's a need for an organization that has sprung up called Versatile PhD, which fosters networking and professional development for people with graduate degrees who may want to explore non-academic work. And joining us to talk about this are two people who work in the field of academia. They teach, and they are familiar with the problems encountered by people with PhDs trying to make inroads in a university setting. Alexandra Oliver is with us. She is a professor at the University of Pittsburgh, as is Anupama Jain, who is also with us, both here in Studio A. Thank you for sticking around to continue this conversation. You can join the conversation at 412-246-2002, and we have Jacob in Bethel Park on the line. Well, we did. I was just about to say, Jacob, thank you for waiting, but he's gone unless he's on another line. You're welcome to call back, Jacob, and you are also welcome to call and take part in the conversation at 412-246-2002. Our email address is esspgh@wesa.fm and on Twitter at esspgh, #EPLive. I mentioned that both of you, both of our guests, are teaching at Pitt, and you are able to identify with people who are in this situation because you're both on short-term contracts. Alex, explain sort of the precarious situation that you're in.
Yeah, so I just want to preface all my comments by saying that nothing that I'm about to say should be construed as a criticism of any particular individuals or institutions. I've had a really wonderful long-term relationship with Pitt. I got my PhD there, and I am on currently a two-semester contract to teach in the Department of the History of Art and Architecture. And this is really common. So even though my situation is a little bit unique because I got my PhD there and it's uncommon for departments to hire their own graduates,
really?
The situation,
why would that be?
I think that they're interested in having diversity in their departments, and often they're looking for things that are quite specific. So just because I got my PhD there doesn't necessarily mean that they want me because I was from there. They might be hiring in a different kind of research specialization,
but
for example.
In the end, they did want you.
For 2 semesters. And in April, I will be losing that job, and I will also be looking for something. And I think that experience is quite common. As I mentioned before, some people are hired for only 1 semester. So it's quite challenging.
But I would think. Anu, you're in the same situation.
Well, so my experience is a little bit different. I, for 10 years, was a full-time professor on the tenure track, and then I've ended up in Pittsburgh for family reasons, which is very common. The requirements for academic jobs, the assumption is that you will move anywhere to take whichever job. So if you have any kind of family, personal constraints, reasons you need to be in a particular geographic location, getting a tenure track job is even harder. And so I taught for full-time for a year when I first moved to Pittsburgh in the English department at Pitt, and now I teach a class when they need me in gender, sexuality, and women's studies. In my particular case, this is an acceptable situation, and I think this adjuncts used to be people who, for whatever reasons of their own, might work in industry but like to be in the classroom, and so they would teach a class, whereas now it's become people's livelihoods. In my case, it's not my entire livelihood.
And that would seem to be, you're paid per course. You're limited in how many credits per semester you can teach. I would think that would be a very precarious way to make your living.
Absolutely, and the pay is not – it's not very good. As Alex pointed out, there are savings in having adjuncts and graduate students teach as compared to paying the salary of a full-time professor. And so the pay is not very high for teaching one course at a time.
And in some cases, people are teaching at 2 universities or more, right?
So you're driving all around and
commuting.
And you don't have an office. You may not even have your little, a little cubicle. You're just sort of in whatever spare area they have for you to sit and try to, pull together your class prep and your notes and your grading and all of that.
And meeting students. And I think that's where it definitely impacts the quality of education that's being delivered. Because you can imagine, say, if you're a student, you might not want to talk to a professor in a hallway in public in the middle of everything.
Right.
So,
and yes, this is a lesser value for more money that students are being being required to spend on tuition. Let's go to the phones. 412-246-2002. We have Linda in Point Breeze with a great question. Linda, welcome.
Hi.
Yes. Hi.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thank you. You're on the air. Go ahead with your comment or question for Alex and Anu.
Of course, I'm happy to. I have a Juris Doctor in intellectual property law and an MBA, and I focused in marketing. Got those about, hate to say it, but about 30 years ago, and I've always had an uphill battle trying to market myself in positions other than those. How do you overcome the perception by employers that you're overqualified and or are not pursuing a job in the field you received your higher education degree in?
This is a great question, and it speaks to what seems to be a very common tale. People with advanced degrees being told, you're overqualified for this job. We can't possibly hire you. What about that? Alex?
Yeah, sure. So that's something that we actually talk about all the time. And on the Versatile PhD forums, people bring it up because it is a real serious issue. So I think there are a number of different ways people handle that. First of all, there are some companies like Anu mentioned, such as McKinsey, that recognize the advantage of having these kinds of degrees. So there are some companies that are a little bit slightly ahead of the curve that do value them, and actually marketing yourself as somebody who has a degree to those companies is actually a strength. But I agree that in general, sometimes people look at these degrees and think you're overqualified. So using the cover letter as an opportunity to frame your pursuit of a different kind of employment is really, I think, the place where you have an opportunity to say, hey, it's not like I left because I couldn't hack it as a professor, or I left because of some other reason, but to say this new job or this new direction that I'm pursuing is actually consistent with my interests, which I can demonstrate in the following way, and then hopefully have a resume that kind of matches that. So the resume could show that you volunteered, for example, in a nonprofit sector or anything else like that.
And might you want to tailor that resume rather than just like pull out,
Always.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And that's actually, it took me about a year to change my CV to a resume. It's a different genre, and that's another kind of professional development skill that we're really interested in helping people find the resources to do, to write in a different way, to tell your story in a different way for a different different market to get a job.
Let's go back to the phones and our good friend Ted calling from Mount Washington. Ted, thank you for joining us on Essential Pittsburgh.
How you doing?
I love good. Your
host. Real quick, my question is pretty much, especially with the colleges. I talked to a couple professors, and most of them are doing research or looking up.
Ted? Oh, we lost Ted. Ted, why don't you call back? 412-246-2002 is the number to call. It sounds like you were about to make a very salient point, and we would like you to come back and finish your thought for us. You know, one of the things that, you know, comes up, I'm sure, for people who are listening right now who are saying, you know, oh, gee, you got your PhD and you can't find work. Well, welcome to the club. I've been looking for a job. You know, there are plenty of people who don't even have degrees that are out of work that have been searching and, you know, find that even in this improving economy that getting a job, identifying a job that that you want, first of all, and then getting that job are a real challenge. So why should Pittsburghers care about this issue?
There are a number of reasons that people should care. So to be very abstract for a moment, it goes to the core of what we think it means to be an educated society and what we think are important, not just short-term but long-term skills, an ability to look at the big picture, and that people who get PhDs are trained both in research and they're trained in some very specific area, but to really take a global look. And if without that, I think we're really setting ourselves up for a society that I don't think most of us would want to live in, where we don't know very much. We wouldn't know about science. We wouldn't know about literary truths that might bind us across all the differences. So that's a very abstract answer. In general, people should know about this because I think the models being used in higher education are serving no one's interests except a very limited number of people who are building a corporate model and furthering their own interests. So you hear stories all around the country of boards of trustees, of lawyers and business people who are determining higher education policy based on their special interests. So it means that we don't have higher education, the American dream, the idea that through education we're going to build a better, more equal society, and education is becoming harder and harder. So when you look at the PhDs, it's a symptom, for me, it's a symptom of a larger problem. And you have many, many wonderful, committed people in higher education who are watching this happen and don't feel like they have much control or say in stopping it.
I think we have – pardon me for interrupting you and you. I think we have Ted back on the line from Mount Washington. Ted?
Hey, I'm back.
Got that phone recharged, buddy?
Oh, yeah. Oh, real quick. I mean, some of the professors I talked to a lot of them are frustrated. They'd rather be teaching than doing research and writing grants. And it seems like it's a problem in a lot of your colleges. If you're a parent, you're paying tuition for your students. It seems like the student's being ripped off. They're not, you know, they really don't have a full-time professor. And I remember, I think 2 years ago, there was a professor who died in poverty at the University of
It was at Duquesne. Duquesne.
Yeah,
Mary Margaret Voitko, who was, I believe, over 70, and trying to make ends meet as an adjunct, and who didn't have health insurance, and eventually, tragically, died of a heart attack, and she was still working. And it's probably the great fear that a lot of academicians, a lot of would-be professors and instructors have is that, you know, as I try to cobble together a living without being a full-time employee of a university, without having the ability to be on a tenure track to get benefits, am I going to end up destitute and impoverished and unable to retire? Ted, you're asking what is the use of giving a PhD or getting a PhD?
Yeah, getting a PhD. Also, what about forming a union? There's some colleges that's proactive. I think that will help the situation immensely.
Well, and in fact, the adjuncts at Duquesne and others have tried to unionize. So 2 points to respond to here from Ted. First of all, if the PhD is in fact being devalued, why pursue it? And why should universities worry about even having such programs?
So, like I said before, every individual has their own reasons for pursuing it, and we would never want to discourage anybody from going ahead if that's what they want to do, as long as they move forward fully empowered with all the information about the challenges that they're going to meet at the end. I always tell people, you know, if you have a real research question that nobody has answered, that you really just want to dive in and explore, understanding that this is not necessarily going to produce a job at the end, then awesome, go for it. So I don't know if that's a perfect answer, but I think it has to be made at that individual level with sufficient information. I don't want to make it seem like we're telling people that they should not pursue PhDs no matter what, absolutely.
The reasons why universities continue to produce PhDs, there are multiple reasons, but I think the most prominent are that professors are interested in training the next generation of thinkers, and so they want to work with advanced students. They want to pass on their knowledge. They want to see certain fields continue to evolve. Universities actually tend, and don't quote me on this because I'm not an expert, they tend to make money on these programs.
So we know why they have them, and the question is why pursue it? And you're saying, Alex, that it's a personal decision. If it's something you want to do, go for it. Just you have to realize the risks involved. So hopefully, Ted, that answered your question, and thank you for that call. And to Ted's other point, before we take another call here, very quickly, what about the idea of unionizing? Is that something that it's been a struggle for adjuncts to do this? Can they?
I think they can, and I think that we're seeing more of a push towards unionization. It has been successful in many places and continues to be, and I think that, you know, I think that our pursuit of these versatile options and programming is one way of actually also supporting the push to unionization, because if we can demonstrate to the universities that they do not have a monopoly on our labor, then we will be able to leverage that position. Then if we want to go back and say, hey, we do support people who want to stay on the inside, but just know we have options as well.
It goes back to that age-old tradition in Pittsburgh of workers organizing. Let's take one final call from Tracy in the North Hills. Tracy, we're running short on time, so if you can make it quick.
Very brief. I have 2 points. They talked about university administrators making 400% more now. I think it would be more beneficial to look at the differential. Maybe they were making a lot less back in the beginning. I know my mother worked at Pitt in the 70s and only made less than $400 a month. And I wanted to address that. And also, I'm a MBA with a degree in international business, and I was a university administrator. And moving back to Pittsburgh, I've spent 10 years trying to find a job in university administration, and most of the time they require a PhD for, I think, jobs that don't require a PhD. And it's just a hard market for everyone in academia right now. I'm torn about going back for my own PhD. Like, what's the risk-reward? And this is a very interesting show. Thank you.
Thank you, Tracy. And, wow, what a statement that she has an MBA and she's been searching for a job in this town for 10 years. So what about Tracy's comments, about, first of all, about the differences in pay for university administrators? Outrageous?
Some select few have salaries that I think many people would question. When they've been publicized, there has been, tended to be backlash. And I was just making a note to myself that we'll post on our Facebook page some of the statistics about administrator salaries nationally, so that if the last caller and others want to see it, they can find that information. I think it's a tough job market, as you said earlier, and this question of administrative pay, I would say a lot of administrative staff in higher education do not make excellent salaries, and that is, once again, we should follow the money and ask who's making the big bucks.
And Alex, very quickly, to Tracy's situation, should she pursue a PhD? She's questioning whether it's worth it at this point.
I would say she should investigate her other options first. Like I said, unless you have that burning research question, I think there are other easier paths for you. But again, like I said, I feel like it's really a personal choice. And ultimately, if you're informed and you decide to jump in, then more power to you.
We have been talking with Alexandra Oliver and Anupama Jan. They are local representatives for Versatile PhD, a business that fosters networking and professional development for people with graduate degrees. And we thank you for your time and for being with us here in Studio A. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Coming up, exploring the city's lesser-known past. It's Essential Pittsburgh on 90.5 WESA. Essay.